An old quip about the Defense Department is that the Navy, Army, and Marines all have their own air forces. Throw in the Air Force itself and you've got a lot of flying assets. Yet DoD can be surprisingly vague in how it expresses the cost of flight and how to interpret it. The RAND Corporation looked into this and came up with some recommendations for an activity that costs billions every year. Joining me with more, Michael Boyto, Senior Cost Analyst at RAND. Mr. Boyto, great to have you on.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be with you this morning.
I'm surprised, I guess, that they don't really know across the different armed services how much it does cost them or how to account for the cost of flight, which I'm presuming is a billions and billions dollar tab every year.
I think they do know, but the way of capturing or expressing the cost can differ, and that was the focus of our study, was to come up with a standard way of expressing these costs.
And what happens when they express it in different ways?
It can just lead to sort of apples and oranges comparisons, especially when looking across different aircraft systems.
So give us an example of how the same thing could be expressed two different ways and sound different.
First of all, a quick definition. When we're talking about these operating and support costs in the Department of Defense, we mean the cost to operate and support the aircraft after DoD has already paid to develop and procure it. And there are a whole bunch of different elements that are considered in the operating and support costs. Typically, a real big one is the cost of the squadron-level personnel. That would include crew and maintenance and other staff personnel. So that would be a big one. Another one would be fuel. So there are all sorts of different costs relating to operating and support of aircraft. And sometimes only certain of those elements are captured in a cost per flying hour metric, for example. And probably the most common use of that term, cost per flying hour, in the Defense Department is for the flying hour program for each military service. And that's an area that is well-defined for the cost per flying hour program. That's a peacetime program, and it's the hours needed to train air crews for them to achieve proficiency and safety in operating their aircraft. And the training requirements are based either on a number of flights or a number of training events, and this is translated into flying hours. Well, for that measure of operating and support costs, the Defense Department has very specific guidance about which cost elements are included. And so for that program, at least, those costs are pretty much apples to apples across different aircraft platforms. But in other usages, for example, when decision makers are looking at the cost of aircraft programs, say across services, and doing this to compare them or make decisions about their financial performance over time, there's not always a consistent metric or measure of the operating and support costs that are used.
It sounds like they have some problems that occur in the private sector when trying to do cost allocations, and that is just that, is the allocations, say hangars and supply, logistics, all of those things that go into keeping these things aloft, but may not be captured in the direct operating costs.
That is an issue, and the Defense Department has good standard definitions of all the costs that it captures and are included, and it's just a matter of making those explicit when the cost metrics are used by top decision makers in DoD.
And is it fair to say that for every hour or so that an airplane flies, many more hours are spent maintaining and refurbishing it?
Absolutely, yes. And in fact, there's a metric for that too, at least for the squadron level maintainers who are assigned to a squadron for a particular aircraft. And a typical metric that's used is maintenance man hours per flying hour. And just as you suggest, there's much more time devoted to maintaining the aircraft on the ground than the hours that it actually flies.
And for all of us wonks, how does this figure, these figures we've been talking about, relate to what they also call life cycle costs of an airframe or an airplane program?
Right. Life cycle costs, typically the Defense Department divides the life cycle into different phases. Typically research and development and procurement are two acquisition phases. You know, the Defense Department typically pays to develop its military aircraft uniquely for a military purpose. There are some commercial derivative aircraft, but say fighters and bombers, for example, are the Defense Department has to pay to develop those and then, of course, procure them. And then the last phase would be the operating and support phase. So those are all different types of costs that the DoD works with, and then we're focusing here just on the operating and support phase.
Michael Boito is a senior cost analyst at RAND. And what are some of the recommendations you came up with for DoD, and how would they support better budgeting and better understanding of the programs?
We looked at several different metrics that would be suitable, and we recommend two for capturing operating and support costs. And one is the cost per flying hour metric, and the other is a cost per aircraft per year metric. And they're sort of complementary, and each of them gets at a different aspect of military value. And the cost per flying hour tells you, as the name implies, the operating and support cost to fly that aircraft for an hour. And that's one value that an aircraft presents to the Defense Department is flying it for missions. But there's also another value that is, I think, unique to the Defense Department, and that's the value just in having a force structure. And by that, I mean an aircraft with an air crew that's trained and ready to perform its mission. Weapon systems like that have a deterrent value, and that's important in the Department of Defense, too. And in fact, we hope that these aircraft never have to be flown in combat, that just the deterrent value alone will be sufficient to deter aggression. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. But these two metrics are complementary in that respect. The cost per flying hour metric gets more at the cost of actually operating the aircraft, whereas the cost per aircraft metric gets more at its a value in its force structure. Another reason for this complementary metric of cost per aircraft is that cost per flying hour can actually be confusing. It has some fixed costs in it. These operating and support costs, some of those costs are fixed, and the maintenance personnel are a good example of this. They're typically a large cost in the Defense Department operating in support of aircraft, and they're largely fixed or insensitive to the amount of flying that's done. And so if you reduce the number of flying hours for a fleet, the total operating and support cost can go down, but because the flying hours, which are in the denominator of that metric, also go down, the cost per flying hour metric can increase, even though total ONS costs are decreasing. So it's kind of a counterintuitive result for a measure of financial performance. And so for that reason, the cost per aircraft metric is complementary. In other words, when total ONS costs go up, the cost per aircraft metric also goes up. And so it's more a more intuitive result.
And so have these recommendations been presented to DoD, and does it look like something that the financial powers that be there look like they would like to adopt?
We have published the report. I have to say that I think in many instances they do look at cost per aircraft already. One example of a big well-known program where we hope the recommendations get applied would be the F-35 or Joint Strike Fighter.
I knew you were going to say that one.
Right. Yeah, it's the largest acquisition program in the Defense Department. And, of course, it's been criticized for cost growth in every phase of its life cycle, including the operating and support life cycle. And the program is actively and rigorously looking at ways to reduce its cost, including reducing its operating and support costs. And one of the ways that military programs can do that is to make more use of simulators for training rather than actual flying. And what this does is, since there are fewer flying hours, just like I mentioned, the total operating and support cost for the fleet can go down, but the cost per flying hour can go up when you reduce the number of flying hours. And so if decision makers, either in the Defense Department or in Congress, are looking at that metric, they could get the wrong impression that costs are going the wrong way. Whereas if they also consider a cost per aircraft metric, it will move in the right direction. In other words, if the program is able to reduce its operating and support costs, the cost per aircraft per year will go down, and the metric will better reflect the success that the program is having.
Michael Boito is senior cost analyst at RAND Corporation. Find a link to his report and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.